I'm Marie Bernard, host of Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Join me Mondays at noon as we explore the universal energy that connects us all. Let's discuss our journey of self-discovery, joy, presence, and living with authenticity. We can create positive change in the world, and it starts within each one of us. Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Mondays at noon on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Hello, and welcome to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we're waiting for Lori Cohen-Peters to call in. Today, we have a bit of a different episode happening, and it's about sustainability. There's an issue going on. I don't know if a few weeks ago you remember Lori Cohen-Peters was on the show, and she was talking about farming sustainability and some of the problems that are coming up with governmental organizations trying to kind of put the kibosh on sustainable farming. So anyway, hopefully she'll be here to talk to you about that in a moment. Hi, Lori, is that you?
This is me.
Oh, hi. And I think I just lost Michael.
Oh, no.
Hi. Okay, hopefully he'll call back.
Okay.
How you doing?
I'm great. I'm right on time, right? Or
yay.
Am I late?
It's okay. We're all good. So
oh, good. I had 12 here on my clock. So see.
All right.
Okay, good.
So tell us the situation. I'm really flying blind on this. I don't exactly know what's going on. But you emailed me and said that this was something that we need to get the word out about. So what's going on?
I will. I'm going to give you a little setup on what's going on, and then I'm going to tell you very briefly who Michael is, because he won't probably tell you much about himself. So you have a real understanding of this pioneer and leader in the food rights movement and what he's brought to our world, really globally, regarding biodynamic and sustainable farming. But on August the 2nd, the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, CFIA, raided his farm in Ontario, as well as another farmer in Ontario, Montana Jones, in connection with the disappearance of Jones's herd of genetically rare Shropshire sheep. The CFIA brought about 20 officers and multiple police cars to conduct a 7 a.m. raid on Schmidt's farm. And during the eight-hour raid, the officers confiscated all of the electronic recording devices from his home and his farm, including computers, cell phones, and cameras. Schmidt and Jones both faced possible conspiracy charges that could result in up to 14 years in prison. In March of this year, a group that was calling themselves the Farmers Peace Corps claimed responsibility for the disappearance of the sheep that were destined for slaughter due to a connection with the disease Scrappy. While Scrappy is not transmittable to humans and causes no threat to people, it is seen by the CFIA as a threat to other sheep. In June, the Shropshire sheep were found and immediately destroyed by the CFIA. They all tested negative for the disease. CFIA is refusing Jones the appropriate compensation for his sheep. And the reason why Michael got involved in this is because he sort of acted as an emissary for the Peace Corps, and made a statement that said the actions, that said that the actions of the CFIA reminded him of the history of his native Germany, where genetic cleansing became a tragic and horrible national policy. And during a follow-up meeting with the CFIA investigators, he asked them to examine their current policy of mass eradication. He told them that he wanted to find an exemption to the killing program like they have in England. However, rather than construct a dialogue, he got the response of police with guns, a raid at his home where he has small children, and potential criminal charges, a possibility of 14 years in prison. The destruction of these rare, healthy sheep and this raid are not about Scrappy. They want to show who calls the shots here. That was a quote from Michael. And I had just finished working with the Michigan farmers on the eradication of heirloom pigs. And I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Farmageddon. I think we talked about it the last time I was on your program. But there was also a farmer whose sheep were killed. She had them brought in from New Zealand without any opportunity to have them tested or to prove that they were disease-free. There was just an assumption, and the feds came in, took the sheep from our property, and shot them. And all Michael is asking is that there be some kind of a meeting ground between, blind annihilation and really understanding whether these animals are a threat or not. But the undercurrent to this, which is most alarming and disconcerting, is that there does seem to be a big corporate, for instance, in Michigan, it was the pork lobbyists that were really behind the eradication of those heirloom pigs. The only pigs allowed to survive were the white pigs that are used in factory farming. And it feels that this is kind of happening down the line with each animal. And that's another topic, which Michael will go into, I'm sure, on some to some degree. It's happening both in the U.S. and in Canada. So that's what's going on. I want to just tell you who Michael Schmidt is, just a little bit of a background. This man is one of the most passionate, dedicated, and committed contributors to sustainable farming and access to healthy food, and to furthering such an important contribution to the success of any civilization. And I know that sounds hyperbole, but wait till you hear some of what he's accomplished in his short life to date. In 1978, he started a biodynamic organic dairy farm in southern Germany. That farm became the first certified organic farm with cheese processing facilities, and today the cheese from this farm is distributed throughout Germany. 3 years later, he established the first biodynamic organic farm in Egypt, supplying breeding stock for dairy cows. And today, this Egyptian experiment is flourishing. It's a flourishing research center and community farm. Then, I think it was early 200s, he helped train Russian farmers in the principles of biodynamic farming and participated in a research project in China. He came from Germany to Canada in 1983, and introduced spelt to North America. He participated in joint research projects with the Guelph University, offering the farm for annual farm tours for students from Guelph. He founded Antar Bio Organic Farm Products and Saugeen Highland Meats to market certified organic meat in Canada. He developed an export market in Europe for about 30 organic farms in Ontario. And with the support of the government, he launched the first North American organic baby cereal, Suma, with distribution in Canada and the United States. And Antar Bio later transformed into a farmers cooperative with over 80 members. In 89, he helped introduce roadside grazing using 500 to 1,000 sheep for landscaping and to avoid spraying for weeds. And then at some point, I think it was in the early 90s, he developed something called, he created a herd share. And from there, I really don't want to mess the details up, but I know that he created a program where you can basically pay for a cow on his property, and then you could get the milk from the cow and have that milk produced in the way that you desire, devoid of all the antibiotics and chemicals and GMOs.
That's really cool.
And this is when problems started to happen for him. I think that as we've seen a trend throughout all dairy farmers, big dairies, I started to see market share problems, complications, and started clamping down. And what became a part of Michael's life were consistent raids. And I don't know how many raids he's had on his property, but these raids are not fun. They are time-consuming. They're scary for his family. They involve police. They involve confiscation of materials. They involve guns and, court dates and the rest of it. So he's not a stranger to this kind of volatile response from the government, and he's also extremely committed on behalf of his community and really global community in saying we refuse to give up our rights to have sustainable, healthy, nourishing foods. We want to coexist with big business. He's not asking to abolish industrial produced foods. He just wants to coexist. And, we've talked about this before, Marie, in my last time with you, the gross drop in percentages of sustainable farmers that are still around today in your area and what there was, even 30 years ago. And Michael's like a real pioneer, and he's one of the survivors who's not saying no and hanging in there. So he demands attention.
All right. Thank you for that, Lori. Michael, are you on the line still?
I am on the line.
Hi. Okay. So our sound quality seems to be okay to keep both of you on, Lori, if you want to stay on and be part of the conversation. Now, I heard a lot of facts and figures and numbers, and what does it mean in layman's terms? What does it mean to the consumer who just wants to have healthy food and access to non-factory farmed food products?
I think it means that in fact the responsibility for the consumer, which we try to cultivate, is taken away. The consumer, and I hate that word consumer, I rather would like to say co-producer, teaming up with farmers right across the country to create a new economy of direct sales, where actually the government should have absolutely no business to interfere, so that you basically reconnect with the country in a different way, that you have a farmer who is growing for you, you participate in the farm, and therefore you know where your food is coming from. And I think that is the underlying issue in that whole battle, which gets increasingly fierce, that there's, through regulations, a clear leaning towards supporting factory-produced food and supermarket food instead of the return to a sane economy which is based on the land.
Beautifully said, Michael. And that's one of the things. I was actually watching this movie last night with... I have a cold, so my mind is... Justin Timberlake was in it, and the currency was time rather than money. But it was the same issue. It was the people at the top were controlling what the population needed in order to survive. And in this reality, they're controlling our food, our water, things like that. And so what kind of, what can we do as consumers, as members of the public, as people who want to create a better world? I mean, this factory farming, not only are there moral implications about how the animals are treated, but it's not feasible. It's not something that we can sustain. What tips do you have for people, and how can we support you in these legal issues you're having?
Well, the legal issue, I mean, what I'm talking about now is that the debate about the right of consumers or of every individual to choose their food should actually take place in Parliament, and it's not taking place in Parliament. And we are forced to bring it into the courtroom in order that it becomes a part of our record, you know, a legal record, that there are people out there who need the food, and that government is denying our basic liberty to, you know, to access this food. What can you do? Everyone who is seeking that food basically takes the right understands their right to have the right to this food, okay? Support the farmers. Don't be afraid of what's coming down the pipe from the government. You know, if you don't speak up now, everything will get worse. And that is what I tried to say prior also in regards to this whole sheep issue, which is now exploding here in Ontario, that we need to realize to speak up, the time to speak up is now. When in Germany, my heritage Germany, a lot of people woke up to a reality when they could not do anything anymore, when it was too far gone. And that is why I think it is so important that people start to wake up and realize it is more serious than most of the people actually think it is.
All right, Michael. Well, it is time for a break. So we'll be back with more Synchronicity in a moment. We are speaking with Michael Schmidt, and you are a farmer. Do you have a title, or how would you like to be addressed as far as your job or your position?
Me?
Yes, Michael.
I'm a farmer.
Okay.
He's also an innovator and an activist. Can I say that?
Can you repeat that, Lori?
He's a musician. He's also a musician and a conductor.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, so we are speaking with Michael Schmidt and Lori Cohen-Peters. Michael, do you have a website?
Well, there is an interesting... there's actually quite a few websites. There's thecompletepatient.com, that's an American blog. Then there is the bovine at wordpress.com, the bovine, which actually has up-to-date articles about our food fights. And then there's the Weston A. Price Foundation website, realmilk.com. So there's a lot of overlapping issues happening, but it's worthwhile to actually look at all these things.
I'm going to also plug farmfoodfreedom.org because we are always, Michael's on the board for our nonprofit, and we're always wanting to shed light on whatever's going on in his corner.
Which I think will become the most crucial website for up-to-date information about the legal battle and the threats of individual farms right across this continent. So that is, I think, right now the most important website to watch.
Okay, well, it's time for a break, so I'm going to put you on hold, and we'll be back with more Synchronicity in a moment. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and this is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. You might also be listening in Kamloops at CFBX or in Prince George at CFIS or online at CITR.ca, CosmicDimensions.com, EmpowerRadio.com, or on the Co-Creator Network. And I just want to let you know, I've decided to start hosting a little bit of a contest every season. I get all these wonderful spiritual and self-help books sent my way, and I have oodles of them, and I give them away to friends or whatever after I'm done reading them, and I've decided, why not pass them on to you? So I'm going to, there are 11 books right now I have that I'm going to be giving away to one lucky listener. So you can go, I'm going to be holding the contest through the month of August and sometime into September. My website where you can sign up for the contest is spiritualshow.com/contest.html. spiritualshow.com/contest.html. And maybe I should put a link to that on the main page at spiritualshow.com. Anyway, so if you want a chance to get 11 different books, you can also go on to my Facebook page, just search Synchronicity Radio on Facebook and you'll find it. And there are more details about each specific book that I'll be giving away. So we'll be back with more Synchronicity and more of this discussion with Lori Cohen-Peters and Michael Schmidt in just a moment.
CITR, Mantra Radio, and Chant and Give Peace a Chant presents Women of Bhakti, a new film by Geneva Harrison in its Canadian debut screening. Come to Open Door Yoga at 16th and Arbutus, Friday, August 17th at 8 p.m. to catch this documentary film about women in the Bhakti. Tickets are $20 and include the film, a Meet the Producer opportunity, refreshments, and kirtan. For more information, visit givepeaceachant.org.
Want to be a kidney hero? Don't know how? It's simple. Join the Kidney Walk in August. Walkers are invited to join friends, family, and neighbors to walk. Bring pledges and take the first steps in becoming a kidney hero by registering to be an organ donor. For more information on how and when you can be a kidney hero, visit www.kidney.bc.ca. That's www.kidney.bc.ca. Be a hero. Save lives. Register.
Welcome back to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and we are speaking today with Michael Schmidt, who is a farmer, and Lori Cohen-Peters, who is an activist. And what is your title, Lori?
I would just say I'm an advocate for access to foods produced and grown the way that the co-producer or consumer chooses. And Marie, can I just say one thing?
Sure.
You know, I kind of downplayed, I didn't downplay, but I made a joke and added all these other labels to who Michael is or what he is. But the truth of the matter is that the farmer is the most heroic position in our civilization today. And we have to wake up as a society and realize that we are dependent on them for our very survival. We need to rally behind them, support them, and start investigating how we can, who they are, who are the farmers in our area, and how can I support that farmer, and what is it like to be a farmer in today's climate? So I just didn't want to underscore that very noble title.
I think I'm thankful that you're saying that, because that basically covers it, that, you know, that about 100 years ago, 70% of the population was directly involved in farming, and now it's less than 2%, and the average age of every farmer right now is 58 years old, and that is very scary when you think, who will feed us? Basically, we have no choice anymore than choosing factory food, because there are no real farmers left.
This is scary, because I go into the grocery store and I see, I mean, I try to be conscious of, I don't know whose phone that is, but there's making some noise there. I'm just going to turn you down for a second here. So I go into the grocery store and most of the time, I mean, at Safeway, there's not even anything organic available. There are a couple of overly packaged, highly processed brands that say organic on them that Safeway produces. But beyond that, there's really not a lot. Thankfully, there is a bit of a section now for organic produce, but it's also so mass produced. I mean, you're not really... You have to wonder where this food is coming from, how it's actually being produced, and if we're actually going to get to the point where we're able to sustain ourselves on this planet, we're going to have to get back to regular old farming and slowly start to move away from the factory farming. Now, the issue of the day today is the sheep with the scrappy. So as a regular consumer of factory farmed meat and whatnot, I mean, my concern would be, okay, well, if these animals have this disease, I mean, we hear about mad cow disease and foot and mouth disease. So it seems to a lot of people probably that it would be a logical way to deal with the problem to eradicate these animals, unfortunately. So what's the real issue? I mean, what does it really mean? These animals, you were keeping them, they weren't sick?
I think what needs to be clear here, there's no debate about that, you know, the attempt to try to eradicate scrapie, which is a wasting disease, which is fatal and has severe economic impact for farmers. There's no question. It has no impact on human health. However, the reality is they don't have conclusive testing abilities to determine if sheep, in fact, have scrapie or not. Now, what they're doing is they do genetic profiling and say, well, this sheep is more susceptible to scrapie and this one not. And as it turns out, that England, for example, has program where they exempt rare breeds, so where there is only a limited gene pool available, that they exempt from the total killing policy. Basically, what they're saying is, if you find one scrapie animal in your herd, you're eradicating the entire herd, okay? And in Montana Jones' case, that's the shepherd who had this herd, they claim they found a scrapie-infected animal 2 years ago in Alberta, and then she tried to work with the Canadian Food Inspection Agency and said, let's preserve the genes or the genetics, and I'll stay under a quarantine, and we'll just see if something comes up down the road. And the CFIA said, no, we kill them, because then we have conclusive proof that they are healthy. You know, it doesn't make sense. Just kill first, and then you come out and say, well, oh, sorry, they're healthy, yeah?
And then, of course, there's no...
And Marie, I just want to add that, you know, the impact is far greater than just a couple of sheep, which in itself is, you know, depending on your spiritual orientation, I know the show waxes in that direction, and we know Abraham Hicks's position on, you know, the death of the sheep, but there's certainly a lot of animal supporters out there that would cry up in arms for senseless killing. But beyond that, there's the livelihood of the farmer. That, to me, is a very crucial part of the puzzle. One of the reasons why we're losing our farmers is because it's becoming increasingly difficult for them to survive in this food, in this political climate. And it's expensive. There's increasing more paperwork. there's constantly more restrictions and conditions and quality profiles they have to fulfill. And it sort of is seeming like a lot of the federal agencies are employing a kind of bullying tactic to just drive these independent farmers out. So I want to bring attention to Montana Jones, the farmer who lost her sheep, because that was a huge loss for her, and it was senseless. And I don't know how she picks herself up and continues on, you know, with, you know, being able to survive and provide nutrient-dense food for her community.
And let's talk a little bit about the actual nutrient-dense issue here. For those listeners who didn't hear my show with Lori Cohen-Peters a couple months ago, Michael, can you talk, please, a little bit about the difference between the food that you farm and the food that we get at the grocery store?
Well, the reality is that the world has gone to quantity is more important than quality, okay? So everything is measured by how many bushels and so on you get in. It has to do very much with the cheap food policy that, you know, we have trained the consumer to always look for the cheapest food. You know, usually people look for the best fuel for their car, but they look for the cheapest fuel for their body. And what we're trying to do is re-educate people and say, well, it doesn't make sense, you know, that you just fill up your body. It's not about filling up your body. It is what goes in your body. And then you even can you reduce the intake drastically, because the nutrient density in the food is so much higher when it's growing appropriately instead of based on chemicals, fertilizers, which simply just pumps a lot of stuff in it, but really does not address the issue of nutrients. And there's an old saying, we will, you know, the majority of people, they will starve to death in front of full tables because you cannot get any more of the nutrients out of the food which you need to keep to stay healthy and alive.
And now, Michael, you mentioned the cost. And my question is, because I kind of feel like if you're buying something directly from the farmer, one of the things that I notice is when I go to farmers markets, I guess it depends on the area, but there's a farmers market in like Kitsilano, which is a nicer, more affluent area of Vancouver. And the prices there are just as much as it costs for me to go to Choices Market. Yet there's no middleman. And so I wonder why, I mean, if I have to go there especially and get up really early on Saturday morning to go pay the same prices, why don't I just go to the grocery store where it's convenient and I can go any time of day? So why is it? Is it all of the problems that farmers are facing that would food directly from farmers be more economical if their animals weren't being slaughtered and they weren't always having to deal with these legal battles?
Well, I mean, the reality is what is more important in your life? I mean, let's face it, isn't a TV more important in your life, or is food more important in your life? The food has become, you know, is at the bottom of the ladder. And there was, I think, the omnivore dilemma describes it quite nicely, where in the book where they say, well, it's in the old days, there was, I think, I'm just picking the numbers now out of my head, 40% was spent on food and 5% was spent on medication. Now, we're spending 40% on medication and 5% on food, which is a complete reversal and just demonstrate it is the food our health depends on and not the medication. The medication now makes it even worse. So if you do not value the food and support the farmer in his struggle, you know, kind of, then basically we're losing everything. And I think Lori described it quite nicely, where she says, if people don't realize that farmers themselves become a rare breed, and if you don't support them, then all the sources of healthy food are gone.
I would like to interject that as a nutritionist, you know, I'm a health counselor, I deal with people all the time that have come to me with all different kinds of disorders or they've got pharmaceutical dependence. And I literally see huge impacts by just taking them off of processed, industrialized, produced foods and getting them on foods produced by the local farmers, farmers markets, and these nutrient dense, which means, you know, well, it's a wide top umbrella statement, but it includes grass-fed meat and dairies that are devoid of the antibiotics and the GMOs. I'm a writer and a speaker on GMOs, so I'm a big proponent of getting off the GMOs. And just with that alone, you see such a huge improvement. And sadly, I think part of the gap here is that when you eat like I do, or Michael does, when you eat these real foods, you feel so good. You have so much energy. You're alive. You're able to complete the task of your spirit, if you will. And it's very hard to impart what somebody's missing when they've never had that experience or they don't really understand how they can get access to that via their food. So I think that it's a very key component to not just productivity, but the one's zest in life and one's ability to really live life to their fullest.
Thank you, Lori. And so I'm curious now, what kind of steps you guys are talking about wanting to make change in Parliament and also in the U.S. Government as well? So what are some ways that people, do you have any petitions going on? How can we support you?
Okay, let me tell you. I think petitions are important. They're important process partially for people that they get a sense that they take part in it. However, in reality, in Parliament, petitions mean hardly anything. They get so many petitions for stuff they don't understand the impact of what it means to people when they really want to get something done. I think it is important to directly communicate with your members of Parliament, that you bring it out in the newspapers, that you share it. I think Facebook is an incredible tool. Internet is an incredible tool. I think waking up people, this whole process is about waking people up to the reality we are facing right now. And I think farmers and several people are willing to go to sacrifice a lot in order to be able to wake people up to this cruel reality that down the road we have absolutely no choice anymore, and we just can eat what you know the government approves us to eat. And so in a way, this is a wake-up call for a lot of people to get involved in the process and bring it out wherever you can so that people wake up.
I'm going to suggest that you also go to, again, farmfoodfreedom.org and like us on Facebook. We're very active. You can find us Farm Food Freedom Coalition on Facebook, or you can go there via our site. And also, if you go to our site, sign up and be on our members list so that we can send out calls to action when applicable. We have a subgroup called the Raw Milk Freedom Riders. We hold events, workshops on your rights, as well as rallies and events that include speakers. We have something coming up on August 18th for any Americans called the Lemonade and Raw Milk Freedom Day, which is profiling our right to common exchange. We've had issues here in America where a young girl's lemonade stand was shut down by the FDA. And that's in conjunction with one's inability to sell raw milk or even participate in a herd share. So there's lots of events and activities, and I'm sure we'll be including Canada in the near future. And so that's a good way to stay abreast of what's going on and be privy to calls to action when necessary.
Wonderful. Thank you. Okay, so it is time for a break. We're going to be back with more Synchronicity in just a moment. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and this is Synchronicity Talk Radio for your mind, body, and soul. We're speaking today with Lori Cohen-Peters and Michael Schmidt. And again, Farm Fresh, what is the website?
Farmfoodfreedom.org.
Farmfoodfreedom.org. And again, I'm hosting a little bit of a contest, a book giveaway. I'm going to be sending out 11 books to one lucky listener of the show. So please do go to my website, spiritualshow.com/contest.html if you want to join that and have a chance to win some amazing books. And you can look me up on Facebook. Synchronicity Radio is the name of the page, and I'll be posting individual write-ups and photos of each book that I'll be sending out. Again, spiritualshow.com/contest.html, and we'll be back with more Synchronicity momentarily.
Right here on News 101.
Right here on News 101.
Right here on News 101.
What motivated you to become a candidate in the provincial election?
The media portrayal of last week's protest that resulted in polarizing images of black-clad activists taking to the streets.
He was just explaining to us the reason why they wanted to show this film on campus.
The official stance is that we are for the Olympics.
News 101 reporter Brad Pepping was there.
By discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities.
I was pretty outraged. I mean, it is outrageous.
In-depth coverage from an alternative perspective. News 101 is Vancouver's only live, volunteer-produced student and community newscast, bringing you local, national, and international news from an alternative perspective. Tune in Mondays and Fridays at 5 p.m. right here on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. Live streaming and podcasts are available online at citr.ca.
Listen up, the deadline for Shindig 2012 is fast approaching. If you are a local musician or band, now is your chance to get in on this high-stakes battle of the bands and earn yourself some prizes and glory. Past participants of Shindig include the Pack AD, 3 Inches of Blood, Japan Droids, You Say Party, and so much more. All styles are welcome. The deadline for digital submission is August 6th, while physical entries must be received by August 12th. For instructions on how to submit your entry, go to citr.ca or find CITR Radio on Facebook.
There are a lot of things you're not allowed to grow in your basement in Vancouver. Vegetables are not one of those things.
SPEC and the YWCA are excited to introduce the Urban Farmer Field School. The UFFS provides hands-on training in sustainable agriculture, small farm business planning, and community food action.
Class instructors are experts in urban agriculture, food systems, and plant mind control. The integrated curriculum is divided between classroom theory and practical learning.
For more information, please visit the interweb and search for Farmer Field School at spec.bc.ca.
So that was kind of an interesting ad, spec.bc.ca. Oh, welcome back to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. Lori and Michael, did you hear that ad about the farmers?
Yeah, very interesting. I mean, I don't know if you're familiar that there's a huge battle going on in some local community about growing on a city lot food for the farmers market, and the bylaws doesn't allow it. And that I hear that more and more that bylaws in the cities do not allow vegetables on your front garden. You know. It's crazy.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. Because I have a friend who lives near San Francisco, and she's actually, instead of having a grass yard, which is really only useful if you've got kids that want to do cartwheels and run through the sprinkler, she's got a whole vegetable garden in her front yard.
Yeah.
But some places don't even allow that.
Yeah. And especially, I think it's on Vancouver Island. It's appalling.
Well, we actually had a lawsuit that was just recently won by a father here, I believe it was in Michigan, who planted a vegetable garden and was threatened to have it torn up. And he was in Missouri, I'm sorry, and faced charges and had to go to court and actually just won. So that's good news.
So what was the reasoning for not being allowed to grow vegetables?
I don't know the details, but it has to do, you know, that councilors, they pass bylaws, and then the bylaw officer has to crack down. And so there is no right. Basically, what it comes down is that there is no right. It's a privilege to grow your own food. And more these kind of ridiculous regulations and bylaws have been created, probably not with the intention to limit it, but are used now to limit people's individual choices.
That's the big issue, too, because, Marie, when you're, I think I sort of intimated this in our last talk, but when you're on the outside, you see all these particular situations and you think, well, it's endemic to that individual or that area. But the truth is, when you get closer, you realize that it almost feels like a systematic annihilation of individual farming or autonomy to grow your own. There was another woman in another state in America who was forced to shut down her backyard garden, and she was giving it to the neighbors. There was a very low-income neighborhood, and she was giving free fresh vegetables to these neighbors, and they shut it down and said that it was illegal for her to give food that she was growing to her neighbors. And then in Missouri, they were saying that it was an eyesore to have it in the front yard, but that was a violation of his rights, and so he took it to court and won. And Michael really is stating something when he feels that it's going to move out of the parliament or the political system and into the courts. I think at the end of the day, we really have to get savvy about our rights, and we have to be willing to take action to preserve them.
Okay, so this is the issue, though, is that apathy is, like, rampant in our culture because life for us is pretty good and people don't tend to take a stand or make an effort until things really get so horrible they have no other choice. So how do we, I mean, you guys, this I just thank people like you so much who are out there fighting for our rights and fighting for the planet and the good of humanity every day. How do you motivate people that just don't care because they're too busy locked into their Blackberries and their television?
I think the only thing you can do is by example. You know, you can try to teach as much as you want, but the greatest impact is teach by example. And that might help to wake, you know, some people up. But if these people wake up and then teach and then be an example for others again, then it becomes slowly a movement the government has to reckon with.
Wonderfully said. Thank you. So again, what is your site again? Farm? I've got to write it down.
Farmfoodfreedom.org.
Farmfoodfreedom.org. And if people want to get involved, they can also go on your Facebook so they can learn about how they can get in touch with local farmers in their area, how they can lead by example, how they can advocate.
Yes, there will be more great, innovative websites and projects that are in the works that will really help to connect a person directly with their farmer down the pike. But in the meantime, you can get on our mailing list or you can follow what's going on in the food rights world. And there's celebratory things too, Marie. It's not all doom and gloom. There's a lot of great innovations. There's a lot of great, amazing voices and farmers out there like Michael Schmidt that are just so inspiring and really help to make the wake-up a joyous thing. So you can get all that information on our Facebook page.
I just remembered the battle is happening on Vancouver Island, and Dirk Becker, B-E-C-K-E-R, is on the front lines there, and it's called basically, when you go on Facebook, Protect Urban Agriculture. So people can get involved actually on every level to develop an alternative to the current economy.
Wonderful. Lori, maybe later on today you can send me some of those links and I'll put up on my website, spiritualshow.com, on the past shows page with the link to this podcast. I'll put up links to the Facebook page and farmfoodfreedom.org and some other sites so people have easy access and they don't have to spend all day Googling it. So I'm going to play a little bit of music before I end the show. So I'm just wondering if there's anything that you want to put out there that we haven't discussed yet.
Michael?
No, I think we discussed quite a bit. I think people, if people really understand, first of all, that courts are not so scary, okay? Courts are like theater. Courts are like a Shakespeare game. You go, you need to lose your fear. You go in there and you state the truth. And that is what matters. And state your case, because you can put the judges to their task that they have to judge you on the evidence you provide, and that is honesty.
Wonderful. And Lori?
I would just say that, you know, the time is now to recognize where your food comes from and what the connection is between the way you feel and what you eat and the health of the planet, and that it's a wonderful thing to shop your vote on your plate. So choose wisely where you spend your money. And if you like the way somebody's producing food, put your money there. But if you feel that there's a better producer, like a local farmer, farmer's market, alternative producer, artisan, then consider researching those options and choose with your wallet.
Now, I want to talk also about, because like I said, with the apathy, and for me, honestly, I mean, I completely adore what you guys are doing and I appreciate it so much. And the fact is that I am not going to drive all out to like wherever Aldergrove to meet some farmer and get some raw food. I have a busy life and it's just not, I would like it to be a higher priority. Perhaps it will be one day, but I'm still going to continue going to the grocery store. So are there better choices that you can make? Like sometimes I'll go to a different...
Yes. There are. I'm sorry to cut you off. There are, and this is really what I do, you know, with my practice, is really educating the consumer on how to navigate, not just going to a farmer, but also navigating the marketplace. And the main objective I see is to avoid GMOs, and that's a longer discussion. But I hear what you're saying about the apathy or the priorities and the awakening, and I do want to say that it's not an immediate process. It's a journey. And all of us have taken it, and, you know, it's slower for some than others, but we're all continually in a process of awakening. So any little thing that you do is a step in the right direction if it feels good to you. Getting educated on how to avoid GMOs and choosing an organic or a company that went out of their way to get, I don't know if Canada has the non-GMO project certifications out yet in your marketplace. Do you know about that?
Michael?
I know about it. I'm not quite sure if they have introduced it here.
Okay, so I'll have to check with them. I work with them on another project and find out if they're going to introduce that into the Canadian market. But to go out to find producers, even in the processed food world, that are going out of their way to source from farmers like Michael, who actually care more about how they're producing the ingredients than the commercial farmer. It's just a small way of going about it, and you do yourself a great service. So even though from a nutritionist perspective, it may not be the ideal diet because it's still, you know, kind of an imbalance of ingredients, if you're going for organic over, and it would have to be, but you guys, I don't know what your certifications are. In America, USDA organic is the way to know that besides a small amount allowed for cross-contamination, you're really avoiding GMOs. There's a lot of wabi-sabiness in other organic certifications. So I'm not really sure about what it is in Canada, but you should investigate it and find out. So when you go to your Safeway the next time, you would choose that organic potato chip instead of the other, or, well, let's see, more specifically to GMOs, corn chip. So you're avoiding the GMO corn chip. You'll do yourself, the environment, and this whole food climate a great service by putting your money in that bag of corn chips versus the other.
Well, and you know, another thing that I just thought of that you can do, especially when you're dealing with the smaller grocery stores that aren't, you know, international chains, you can actually say, like, I want you to start carrying this product. I want you to start carrying non-GMO, organic, right, local farm produced, and encourage them and get you and all your friends. And if 50 people all go to the grocery store and all tell them, you know, we want produce from this dude down the block instead of shipped from New Zealand or whatever, because that's what they, one of the markets that I I shop at, they do make an effort to make more organic and sustainably farmed products available, but they a lot of times they ship them in from other countries, which I guess is better than nothing, but all of the carbon footprint just to get it there is...
But Marie, it sends a huge statement, and I want to tell you what you're doing is a great thing. I mean, I'm the mother who's in the store with her cell phone calling the company saying, are there GMOs in this? I write letters to bread companies and literally get them to change their ingredients. In fact, I just did that with a bread producer. But, yes, so that kind of advocacy work, that outreach to the producer to let them know that you do, as a consumer, care, sends a very big message. And not putting your money in the foods that don't fall in that category sends a big message. So I would say in this moment, personally, I would choose that carbon footprint of the things shipped in, particularly if it's flown. That's a whole other story about diesel fuels in your food versus flight, but whatever. But I would do it just to let the vendor know that you will not support GMO foods. I mean, it's a small thing you can do, but yes, speaking out, letting them know you care, letting them know that you're an educated consumer, getting friends and community members to do the same. These are great services you do to the whole situation.
And if you ask them on an individual basis and they don't want to carry it, you can use social media and tweet like, hey, grocery store, I asked you to carry this product instead of another one and you refused. How about now that it's out on Twitter for all the world to see, is your attitude going to change?
Yeah.
That's right. They just did that recently with Kashi, which is now owned by Kellogg's. And Kashi presents itself as a very organic and natural product. And it's loaded with lots of their products are loaded with GMOs. And a store in upstate New York put a little sign that said, we found out that these are GMO, even though it says natural, for the Kashi cereal. And it went viral on the internet, caused a huge uproar. And as a response, Kashi made a video addressing all their consumers and apologizing. And it was a big deal. So, yes, we have a lot of resources today with social media that we didn't have in the past, for sure.
This is awesome. I love rocking the boat in a positive way. So thank you so much for being on the show today. Is there anything you want to add before we say goodbye?
All the best for your show, and thanks for doing that.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael.
Bye-bye.
And thank you so much for working so hard every day, for so passionately, and for what you believe in. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you, Marie.
All right, bye. So again, that was Lori Cohen-Peters and Michael Schmidt. If you want more information on them and the work that they're doing, go to farmfoodfreedom.org. And I will also put up the podcast of this show with some links to some of the websites that we talked about at spiritualshow.com. You can just go to the past episodes page. And hopefully, yeah, on my main page, I'll also add a link to the book giveaway contest so that you can sign up for that. Coming up in just a few minutes is Parts Unknown here on CITR, and I'm going to close the show with a song by the lovely Surya Devi, who was on last week, and I want to send lots of love to you. I hope that you are enjoying this beautiful summer, and be well, have a wonderful day. Remember to get involved and use what you have available to you. We have so much power as consumers. If you actually care about this issue, I mean, if you don't, then that's whatever, your business. But if you do want to get involved, we don't have to take these huge steps. We don't have to be fighting for vegetable gardens in our front yards. We can just vote with our dollar and speak out on social media and make small differences in that way that can actually have an enormous impact on the world. So farmfoodfreedom.org if you want to get in touch with Lori Cohen-Peters or Michael Schmidt. I'll be back with more Synchronicity next week. Be well. I love you so much. Namaste.
David, I am under.
are a lot of things you're not allowed to grow in your basement.